ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Text 38, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Adrishtaya Namaskritya Nripa Sandarshitatmane Avyaktaya Chadevanam Devaya Svapurang Yayau Adrishtaya Namaskritya Nripa Sandarshitatmane Avyaktaya Chadevanam Devaya Svapurang Yayau One book there is Ulta, seems to be. This one?
Ulta, the red book is
Ulta. Yeah. Seems to be.
Turn it
on. It was upside down, so please don't put the books upside down. Translation. King Prithu then offered his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Lord of all demigods. Although not an object of material vision, the Lord revealed himself to the sight of Maharaj Prithu. After offering obeisances to the Lord, the king returned to his home. Purport. The Supreme Lord is not visible to material eyes, but when the material senses are inclined to the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and are thus purified, the Lord reveals himself to the division of the devotee. Avyakta means unmanifested. Although the material world is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is unmanifested to material eyes. Maharaj Prithu, however, developed spiritual eyes by his pure devotional service. Here, therefore, the Lord is described as Sandarshitatma, for he reveals himself to the vision of the devotee, although he is not visible to ordinary eyes. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena of Maharaj Prithu. You might be wondering why I chose to speak on this verse. I'll tell you from the outset. I've just been reading through many of the transcripts of Srila Prabhupada's recorded speeches and conversations, which have just been released by the Bhaktivedanta archives, where I came across a very interesting statement of Srila Prabhupada's in which he describes the word adrishta. Adrishta means not seen. And this word is used in this verse. Although the story of Prithu Maharaj covers many chapters of Bhagavatam, it's not that much referred to generally, although there are many important instructions here. Here the word adrishta is used to describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has just personally appeared. Adrishta means unseen. He's just appeared. In fact, the English title of this chapter is Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena. And now he's going away, and it said he's adrishta, not seen. Adrishtaya, offering obeisances to he who is not seen. Now, there's a very similar name in Vishnu Sahasranama, Adrishya, which means who is not seeable. Not seen means we don't see at the present time. Someone is unseen. If someone is standing behind the door, I could say, I don't see him. But why is that? Because of some physical interference between that visible object is presently invisible, not visible to me because there's some physical obstruction. But invisible means not seeable under any circumstances. So adrishya and adrishta, there's a difference between the two. Lord Vishnu went away and therefore he became unseen, but generally he is adrishya, non-seeable, not to be seen. Why is that? The explanation is given by Srila Prabhupada in his word-for-word explanation. One who is beyond the purview of material vision, he's not seen by the non-devotees. Alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahiravastitam. Kunti Devi says that she's praying to Krishna personally. She means Krishna is standing right there in front of her, and she says to him that you are not recognized. That's another somewhat different term, alaksha, not recognized. Even though he's inside and outside of everything, he's not seen or not recognized. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namashe purushang tvadyam. She offers obeisances to him who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvaram Prakrite Param, who is beyond the material nature. But he's not recognized. Now, we might see something but not recognize. Just like there are so many people in this room, maybe, 200 at a guess. So someone might be there and someone may say to me afterwards, did you see so-and-so? And I say, no, I didn't see. I must have seen them, but because there are so many devotees here, I might not notice. So that's another thing, to not recognize, that even though you see, but you don't register it in your consciousness. Now, we might actually, Krishna was present personally, and many may have seen him and said, oh yes, I saw Krishna. But at the same time, they don't recognize him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So someone may say, oh, did you see the mayor of Bangalore? Bangalore has a mayor, I guess they have mayors in big cities also. Yeah, the mayor of Bangalore went past. Oh, I didn't see him or her. I didn't see. Oh yeah, but didn't you? You just walked past. But you saw, but you didn't recognize, because you don't know. Yeah, who is the mayor of Bangalore, Bengaluru? You don't know. So you may see, but you don't recognize. You may even talk to him. You may stop and you may say, do you know where the next train to Chennai, which platform it leaves from? And you just walk up to him, something like this, and, oh, you know who that was? No. Oh, that was the mayor of Bangalore. Oh, okay. You didn't know. You saw, but you didn't recognize. So even though so many people saw Krishna, but not everyone recognized him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To recognize him, we have to hear Srimad Bhagavata or Bhagavad Gita, both same message. Hear from Kunti Devi, hear from the devotees who know what his actual position. Generally, he is unseeable. Devotees see him all the time, pure devotees. They see him. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yang shyama sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. The English translation is given very beautifully, that those whose eyes are tinged with the salve of love, they see Shyamasundara always within their hearts, the inconceivable transcendental form. They see him within their heart always. But for the non-devotees, they can't see him. He's adrishya, invisible. They're not fit to see him. He doesn't reveal himself to them because they have no qualification, no love for him. Now the atheists, they will be, they're astonished. Someone who's a committed atheist, they say, how can people be so stupid? They all believe in this God. You can't see him. You can't hear him. You can't touch, taste, smell, feel. There's no scientific proof. It's just, obviously, if there's no way to verify whatsoever, so it's just some mass imagination. So many people believe in some God, but how can there be any God? You can't. Show me God, they will say. They don't consider that there may be some qualification required to see. Just like in a crowd of people, you may point out, show me the mayor of Bangalore. There he is. You're pointing, but there are 50 people. You don't know who it is. So, it said that has to be described more carefully. Then it's the one wearing a blue jacket with a gold button in the lapel, or something, more detail. But then you have to be willing to accept the person who explains to you that what they're explaining to you is correct. So we have to see by hearing. Now there may be a problem with that. Even if you say, well, you have to hear about God. Well, someone says God is like this, someone says God is like that, someone says God is Allah, and someone says God is Jesus, someone says God is Shiva, someone says God is adrishya, avyakta. These words both come here. And unmanifest, unseeable in all respects. Others say that God is Krishna. So how can you know? Well, one thing we can surmise is that there is God. Otherwise, even if people don't see God, well, first of all, because you can't see God doesn't mean that everyone can't see God. Those whose eyes are tinged with the salve of love. There are so many people in the what is nowadays called Hindu tradition or Christian tradition. They've given up all Jewish, Islam, whatever the label may be given. There are many people throughout the known history of mankind who have left everything to seek out and find God, and people who feel their life connected with him. They feel this connection when they go and pray in the mosque or whatever, leaving Tamil Nadu early this morning. We saw did you see that just when we were leaving? They're going to the mosque in the first village we went through. So they're going early morning in the cold weather, getting up, going to the mosque. Why are they doing that? There's some feeling, and there are millions of people going to the mosque every day and church, and they're feeling there is, even though he is avyakta, unmanifest to the common vision, or adrishya, invisible, but he's there. There's a higher power there. Otherwise, why is it that so many people over generations, they are taking trouble to connect with him? So for the atheist, he can't imagine why should anyone believe in God. The answer is, why should anyone approach God? The answer is given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukriti narjuna artho jignyasur artharti jnani cha bharatarshava. Why does anyone approach God? Four basic categories: distressed persons, persons who have some particular object in mind. Artha can mean money, they want money. Or it can mean they have some particular, artha also means objective. So they may have something in mind that, it may be even I want to kill my enemy, so I approach God. It may be. Or I want to, so many things. Our country will win the war. They have some specific object in mind and they approach God. Or they find it fascinating. What is it all about? Seeking the truth. Or one who is convinced, actually, there is God. Philosophically convinced. Now let me try to find Him. So these kind of people, they approach God. But if they have some piety. Now the atheist also doesn't believe in any such thing as piety. He may believe in morality. We should do good, but they don't have any basis to their morality other than, well, we all live here happily and peacefully before we all die. But piety, especially in the Vedic understanding, that means even if not in this life, in a previous life, one may have performed some activity which brings us in contact with Krishna. It may even be in a previous life that in the form of a dog, we took some Krishna prasada. And Krishna is very merciful and Krishna is very attractive. That is the very meaning of His name. He's very attractive. So the natural attraction for Krishna that is dormant in everyone's heart, that gets a little awakened. Not even awakened, but it gets ready to be awakened. It's something like cocking the gun, ready to shoot. So you're getting it, not actually shooting, but just getting everything ready. Or maybe a better example, getting everything ready for puja. That's also part of the puja, to arrange all the paraphernalia. So he doesn't even know, doesn't have any idea of Krishna or bhakti, but some little attraction is there. And when that builds up, then in another life, or even in this life, when he has association with devotees, then, yes, Krishna. Yes, let me go to Krishna. Now I'm feeling so much distress. What should I do? Go to Krishna. Dhruv Maharaj, so much distress. Who can help you? Who can help me in this situation? He asked his mother. Well, I can't see anyone who can help you. Your father is the king and he's rejecting you. He's the most powerful. Well, you have to go to someone more powerful. But I don't see anyone more powerful. There's an unseen who is more powerful. You have to approach him. He can help you. So Dhruv Maharaj, he was distressed. Or he had a particular artha. Actually, he's an example of artha. Gajendra was distressed. He's the example of someone who is distressed. He called out from a previous life. He had the practice to recite prayers to the Lord, to the unseen Lord, who then became personally visible and came and saved him from the attack of the crocodile. So people who have some piety, if they're distressed, they have a particular purpose, they're inquisitive, and they've understood there is God, they will approach Krishna. So this answer won't be satisfying to the atheist. He won't agree that this is a good reason to approach God. But from the other side, the theist will say, well, why don't people believe in God? Why don't you believe in God? It seems, just as to the atheist it seems absurd to believe in God, to the theist it's obvious, of course there's God. Why don't people believe? How everything is going on, it's all God. He's doing everything, He made everything, He's supervising everything. Why don't people believe in God? And then the answer also comes in Bhagavad Gita. Namang dushkushino murha prapadyante naradhamaha maya paharita jnana asurang bhavamashrita. Srila Prabhupada, this means, for those of you who don't know the translation of this verse, it means that people who are very impious, just the opposite, they don't surrender to me. Even if they are distressed, or they have some purpose to fulfill, or they're inquisitive, they, instead of looking for the ultimate transcendental reality, truth, they'll try to find out. Science, let's try to find out. Quantum mechanics, this is the answer. We don't... God particle. Now we found a God particle, we don't need any God, they think. So people who are impious, who are very foolish, who are very low in their culture, who are apparently very learned, but are actually in complete illusion. And another, the fourth class, those who are just out and out sinful, atheistic, obnoxious, such people, they won't approach Krishna. So he's unseen. Generally in this world, he's unseen. Why do they say if he's unseen? Because we came to this world to forget Krishna. He's seen everywhere by the devotees. He's seen in the spiritual world. He's personally present all the time. But in the material world, hardly. He doesn't come very often. And even then, not everyone... Oh, I was going to say that, yes. This Namang Dishkushino Murha verse, Srila Prabhupada gives a long purport to this. And he said this is a very important verse. And at the beginning of this purport, he poses the question, the rhetorical question, that I'm paraphrasing, that there are so many great scholars and intellectuals and people who are leaders of human society, very recognized and respected persons, then why don't they recognize Krishna? If Krishna's a fact, you have all these Nobel Prize winners, very respected, big brains, Oxford University, PhD, and so on. All people who look up to them. Oh, very intelligent person. And they don't recognize Krishna. Why? If Krishna is the ultimate reality, he is the ultimate reality, but we're just saying it rhetorically here now. If Krishna is the ultimate reality, and the most to be understood by the most intelligent people, actually Bhagavad Gita is a presentation to understand him intelligently, then why don't the most intelligent people recognize Krishna? And the answer is because they're impious, they're of demoniac nature, they don't want to recognize Krishna, they have an inbuilt, just like this this Richard Dawkins, he says, why do so many people believe in God? He's very frustrated. It's not logical. There must be something wrong and something left over in our genetic structure it's clutching at straws argument. So, but actually there is something like that. We find Krishna himself says, not exactly genetic, but Krishna says, those who are godly, abhayam sattva sangshodim jnana yoga vivasati danam damascha yagyascha swadhyaya stapa arjama. And then Bhavanti sampadam daivim. What is it? Sambhavitasya Arjuna. I can't remember exactly. So the godly qualities, they manifest, they're born with a person. A person from previous lives, they have a godly nature. So that is born with that. They have that inclination from the beginning. And then on the other hand, there is the dambho darpo bhimanascha krodha parisham evacha agyana chabhijatasya partha sampadam asurim. And demoniac people, they're proud, angry, conceited, nasty, speaking nastily to others. They take pleasure in giving pain to others. They are foolish. They don't have any spiritual knowledge. And that's they're born with that nature. That's not in the genetic code, but it's the that comes with the subtle body. The subtle body goes from one body to another, and that's carried from one body to another. So such people, they won't see Krishna. They won't see God. They have a predisposition not to understand Him. Through Srimad Bhagavatam, we see Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto, you may remember, I presume most of you have read the first canto. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto, Narad Muni is described, how he came to the despondent Vyasa. And Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport about Narad Muni, who has so kindly appeared in these pages of Bhagavatam. He's personally present in the Bhagavatam. Shukdev is personally present. Tam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanato smi. Suta Goswami offers prayers to Shukadev, who can enter into the hearts of all. Shukadev can enter into our heart. If we study Bhagavatam, then we link with Krishna. Bhakti yoga means to link with Krishna by devotion. That linking, how is that? Anartho pashamang sakshat bhakti yogamat hoksaje lokasya janato vidvangs chakre satnata sanghitam. People don't know that all miseries can be dispelled by the linking process of bhakti. Therefore, the learned Vyasadeva compiled the Bhagavatam so that people can link with Krishna through bhakti. So the first thing is hearing. By hearing, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sada Kabunai Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Kare Udoi. Devotion for Krishna is inherent, intrinsic in everyone's being. It has to be reawakened by the process of devotional service beginning with hearing. So that specifically means hearing Srimad Bhagavat, Gita, Bhagavatam. And that links us with Krishna, Bhakti Yogam Adhokshaje. Adhokshaje, same thing, Adrishya, means that he is beyond the purview of the normal seeing processes. But we can see him through the pages of Bhagavatam. Not only him, Narada is there, Shukadeva is there. We link with all of them. They give their mercy to us. Krishna means with all his paraphernalia. This is called Raja Gachiti Nyaya. If someone says, oh, the king is going. Just see, the king is going. Doesn't mean that the king is walking alone on the street. If the king is going, means there'll be so many ministers and soldiers and band will be going with him playing music. So if we say Krishna, linking with Krishna, that means linking with all his nam, gun, rup, lila, parika, his names, forms, qualities, pastimes, associates, dharma. So everything is there in Bhagavatam. That which is unseen becomes seen. Now I said that Krishna, so many people, Krishna, God, Allah, whatever you want to say, so many people, they're searching for him. What what a person this is. That even though we don't see him, he's so attractive. Krishna means attractive. So many people, they are attracted to him in various ways. Maybe going to the mosque, maybe through the Christian religion, whatever. People are they want to know him, to get closer to him. Or maybe they want something from him. They're attracted to him. They feel that attraction to him. Even though he's unseen, even though we don't directly relate with him in this world, but his attraction is so strong. He's such a powerful person, such a shelter-giving person, that people are attracted to him. Generation after generation. And generation after generation, there are atheists also. It's nothing new that there are atheists. There are always atheists in human society. But for all their propaganda, which seems to be very reasonable, where is God? You can't see God, then there can't be God. But they've been saying this, it's nothing new they're saying. They've been saying this ever since, well, there's no ever since. It's the material world is beginningless. And there are always atheists saying this, but there are always also theists who know that even though we can't see God directly with our material eyes, we can eventually see him, we can experience him through other senses. And there are so many who have seen him, like Narada, Vyasa, Shukdev, Kunti Rani, Prabhupada. They see, and he makes himself available to us as the deity. We can see, the atheist sees. Anyway, the atheist doesn't come to the temple. But if he would come, he would say, oh, it's just a statue. Only a statue. Only a statue. He only sees a statue. But the devotee sees, here is Krishna. He knows this is Krishna. Now, I said that I wanted to speak on this because of the word adrishta. I came across this term in a transcript of a conversation that Srila Prabhupada had that's just been... The transcript has recently been published. Many thanks to the devotees at Bhaktivedanta Archives working hard to make this all available. Srila Prabhupada is commenting on the word accident. We all know the word accident. In Bengali it's Durghatana. I guess that's Sanskrit. So it's probably in Canada Durghata. Yeah. So it means something that happened which is not good. It doesn't have exactly the same meaning as accident. Can you see the difference? Durghatana means something has happened which is not good. It's not auspicious. But accident means it means something has happened which is not good, but without any cause. That's the idea. It wasn't expected. And it's just fate, just like you say, good luck, bad luck. That's also there. Sobhagya or durbhagya. But again, it's not exactly the same understanding, because sobhagya means as a result of something you did previously or as a blessing from God. And durbhagya means it's understood that we made our own durbhagya. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchyate. We are the architects of our own good or bad so-called luck. So there's no real word in Sanskrit, luck. In modern Hindi they say kismat, Urdu word. But there's no, the concept is not there, it's something different. So Srila Prabhupada explains this. He says, nothing happens accidentally. According to Vedic literature, there is no such word as accident. If we look in the dictionary, English to Kannada, we'll say accident, durghata. Or Bengali, durghatana. And I think in Hindi also, durghatana. So that's the translation. But actually it's not completely accurate. You may say, well, yeah, if there's a car crash here, In English, you'll call it an accident. And in Hindi, you'll call it Durghatana. So it's a translation. But the same thing is described with different words in English and in Hindi or Sanskrit. But so that's a translation, isn't it? That's what it means, a translation. But the concept behind it is something quite different. Because in the English language, the concept is something that just happened, there's no real cause, and bad luck. There's nothing, it just happened. It's just like that. But adrishta, Srila Prabhupada explains, there is no such word as accident. The word is adrishta. There is a cause, I cannot see it. Adrishta, it is not in my vision, but there is a cause. There is no question of an accident. There is a cause means that if I have to suffer something bad, like a car accident, that means I must have done something by which that is meant to happen to me. It's meant to... I caused it. Who caused it? Who caused it? We're driving on the road. Two cars crash. Both the drivers get out. You. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. But there's actually the whole science of cause. There are various causes. What is the cause of the accident? One cause is because one driver is inattentive, and the other driver is driving too far on the other side of the road. And another cause is one driver was falling asleep. Another cause, it was night and he didn't have his lights on. There may be various causes, or the brake failed. So you may say various causes. If someone hits someone with a stick and he goes to court, I hit him with a stick. He hit me with a stick. No, I didn't hit him, it was the stick that hit him. I didn't touch him at all. So it was the pain, you can see the pain, but I didn't touch him. So how can you blame me? You can say that the cause of the pain is the stick. But beyond that is the cause of the pain is the person who picked up the stick and hit him with it. And then why did he do that? What is the cause of that? Because he was angry at that person. And what is the cause of that? Because the other person who got hit agitated him. So a person may say, yeah, well, I did hit him with a stick, but that's because he insulted me. And then why did you insult him? Because, and then it goes back. And it's like, sometimes friends or husbands and wives, well, you said this, no, you said that, and you said this, and you said that. And it goes on and on and on and on and back. And what's ultimately the cause is ignorance of our constitutional relationship with Krishna. So there is a cause. It's meant for me. If something goes wrong, it's meant for me. Now that doesn't mean if there's someone is driving inattentively and they drive into my car that you shouldn't say, oh, it was meant for me. No, you should say, come on, you have to pay. You have to pay up. So it's quite it may be quite complex because there are so many different factors involved, but the point, there is no such thing as accident. The word accident doesn't belong in the Sanskrit lexicon. Everything has a cause. We may not see it. The ultimate cause of everything, sarva karana karanam, is Krishna. He oversees everything. How we're enjoying, so-called, and suffering in this material world, Krishna sees everything. So that's a very interesting point that I thought I would share with all of you today. Next time you hear someone say it's an accident, something's an accident, you can remember the term is adrishta. There are different terms in Sanskrit, like Durghatana. Proktan is another word, which is, I don't think it's much known in modern Indian languages. which means it's the same thing. It's the result of a previous activities. Proktan karma means it's the result of the prarabdha karma, the results which we are experiencing now. Proktan means that which is we did something in the past which is now manifesting. But this word adrishta, it means that there is a conscious cause. Someone is coordinating all of that. We are getting what we deserve. There is a supreme judge. So we shouldn't think we can do something wrong and get away with it. There are so many witnesses, and they judge everything also. So there are so many points to be discussed in this regard. I won't say anything more about this now. It's a very big topic, unless anyone has any question about this. No. All right then. Hare Krishna.